You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Are young adults today any different than they were 50 years ago or even 10 years ago? Science journalist Robin Moran-Hennig, contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, and Samantha Hennig, who is the web editor of the New York Times Magazine, attempt to answer that question in their book, 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? It's published by Hudson Street Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought them to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks.
We're also inviting our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. To either ask a question or to share your experience as a 20-something or as the parent of someone in his or her 20s. Let's begin with you, Robin. Isn't this book based on an article that you wrote for the New York Times Magazine called What Is It About 20-somethings?
Right. That was a very popular article and something that got a lot of young people angry.
Now, did that grow out of your own experience or was it just on assignment?
I was looking for an assignment and a way to write about young people because I had two 20-something daughters, and so the topic interested me. And that's when I stumbled upon this idea that young people are maybe going through a new developmental stage of life, emerging adulthood.
And you say it angered a lot of people in their 20s. So what was the main claim of the article?
Well, the claim of the article was not what angered people. The title, which you just expressed, and the way it was sort of laid out, looking like a lot of slackers, I think got people a little bit angry. But the tone of the article, the point of the article, was that young people today might be going through a new developmental life stage so that the expectations for what they're like and what they are concerned about might be different.
And it was the number one most emailed Times Magazine story of 2010. I'm sure you didn't expect that kind
Not
of response.
Not at all.
Samantha, as someone in her 20s, how did you feel about that article?
Well, my mother actually interviewed me off the record when she was working on the article, so that was a little strange to be sitting across the table from my mother with her laptop out saying, so when do you plan to have children? But the way that it actually came together, I thought it was a good article, not that I'm biased or anything. And I ended up, there was a discussion about it on Slate, on the website Slate, and a lot of people were critiquing the article and seemed to think that it was an attack on 20-somethings. And so I ended up jumping into that conversation to sort of stand up for my mother because it wasn't really an attack and she wasn't calling them slackers.
But your only involvement for the article was to be one of the people who was questioned.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you decided to do this book together?
Right.
And you made up a questionnaire, the same kinds of questions?
Not really, because the book was a lot broader than the article was. I was very clear in writing the article to focus on this debate among psychologists about the life stage. But in the book, Sam and I wanted to write about something much broader, about what it's like to be in your 20s and how that compares to being in your 20s in the olden days. So the questionnaire, which was pretty open-ended, asked questions about all sorts of aspects of a young person's life.
Psychologically or in other ways as well?
Well, we were interested in...
For example, people are reaching puberty. Girls are reaching puberty younger today, aren't they? Wouldn't
right.
that affect what happens when they reach their 20s?
Well, I think what more affects in terms of that kind of thing, what more affects your 20s is the sense that you can have babies much later, not that you've been, you know, menstruating for many more years.
And was that something you thought about, Sam?
Young menstruation.
No, having babies later.
That was something that came up a lot when we were, you know, we found ourselves sort of doing a lot of comparing, you know, how are things today for 20-somethings different than they were in the past? And the two obvious differences were technology and the way that that affects, you know, friendship and dating, and then this idea that women in particular think that they can have babies much later, and so that sort of just pushes the whole timetable back.
Well, in your generation, Robert, and all the generations that preceded, and maybe even some that followed, the standard scenario was you graduated from high school or college, you got married, perhaps to your sweetheart from high school or college, and you had children pretty soon. You wanted to have them early so that you could be parents while you were still young and
well, also and just so you could be parents at all. We were very conscious of the age 30 deadline. We felt like if we didn't have babies in our 20s, it would be harder and harder. You know, in my day, things like in vitro fertilization didn't exist. And so the sense that your biological clock was waning was pretty prominent for young women.
So when does the biological clock start ticking for your generation, Sam?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people, I think the age 30 deadline is more like an age 35 deadline now for the young people that I talk to. And I mean, one of the things that was interesting and sort of sad about the research on this is that there's a disparity between what women think of as you know, their possibilities for having a baby later in life and what the odds actually are of that working out. And I think that a lot of young people aren't quite aware of the difficulties in having, you know, they see these older mothers and they assume that that's just, you know, oh, cool, I can have a baby whenever. And it's not actually that easy.
Well, you co-wrote an article on a New York Times blog about parents paying to freeze their daughter's eggs.
Yes.
Right. We were responding to an article that had appeared in the paper in which they said that that the age of freezing eggs in the United States, the average age is 37, which struck me as so old. I mean, if you're 37, you're not really retaining your fertility that well by spending that much money on freezing your eggs. But Sam and I had
with an expectation of becoming pregnant with them at what age?
I don't know. In your 40s, I guess.
Yeah.
Or certainly later than 37, because why else would you go through the pain and expense of freezing them?
My guests are Robin Marantz Hennig and Samantha Hennig. They have co-authored a book called 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? So how did you go about working on this book, researching the book?
Well, I had a full-time job while we were working on it, and my mother is the full-time writer. So she took on the much heavier burden and did the rough draft of most of the chapters. We were sort of, at the beginning, we were trying to figure out what the voice was going to be. Are we going to be a we? Or, you know, how do we refer to ourselves as co-authors? And we decided that it was too weird to try to meld our voices into one. So the bulk of the book is in my mother's voice. And then I have little inserts that are in my voice.
But you also put together questionnaires.
Right. Yes.
Unscientific questionnaires, you admit.
Oh, yes. Very unscientific. I mean, if you want to give it some cachet, social scientists call it a snowball sample, that it's the people who you know and then the people who they know. And it snowballs a little bit. But basically, it was a questionnaire to get people thinking about their 20s. We sent it to the people who we knew and asked them to send it to everybody else.
But doesn't that also limit it to a certain class, usually?
Yes,
and
it
people
totally
in certain
does.
Areas?
Yes. And,
yeah.
And that was a concern to us. The class issue, though, because what we were focusing on in this book is the 20s as a period of life when you have a lot of decisions to make after being told to leave all your options open, it felt as though we were already talking about people who were lucky enough to have some options.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get together with some sociologists and say, we need certain questions that will make this feel more scientific.
Well, we drew a lot on the research that sociologists and other social scientists are already doing. So we weren't thinking of the questionnaire as actually conducting academic research. There are people who are already doing that. And so we talk about a lot of those studies in the book. The questionnaire was more just a way to get some voices in there.
And you looked at, you spoke to both millennials and baby boomers. Their
right,
parents.
Right. Although, interestingly, the millennials were much more verbose in their responses to us about what their lives are like.
So what were some of the questions that you asked in the questionnaire?
Well, we wanted to know many of the same things that we were writing about. We wanted to know what kind of educational decisions people had made, what kind of career choices they had made, whether they had changed careers along the way or regretted having made one decision versus another, and what they thought the trade-offs were between committing early to a particular job or mate versus keeping your options open.
You say that the conversation about kids today is too often a one-way conversation. How so?
Well, I don't think that parents and their emerging adult or young adult children are really being all that upfront with each other about what they expect of each other, what their disappointments might be. I think that I hear a lot of parents saying, you know, my kid can't get it together and I don't know why. And a lot of kids saying my parents are on my case, but not really a whole lot of back and forth.
So what happened when you got this data, Sam? Did you disagree with your mother on how to interpret some of it?
The questionnaire data or what we were researching?
The whole thing. Were there disagreements? Or did your mother just simply say, I'm your mother and you do as I tell you?
There weren't many disagreements. I think, no, because I think that my mother is generally very sympathetic toward young people and the difficulty of these decisions. And so, yeah, I'm trying to think if there were. Well, when we wrote that blog post that you mentioned about the egg freezing, we did sort of disagree there because my mother was saying that women should be freezing their eggs when they're 25, when they have, you know, young, healthy eggs. And I think that is a bit extreme. And also, as a 28-year-old, I'd rather that my mother not be telling me that I'm 3 years too late to freeze my eggs.
But I think scientifically, the eggs of a younger woman are much more vital than they are when you get older.
It's true.
That's why we see birth defects often.
Right. It's so loaded to sort of say, I'm going to freeze my eggs now. It says all sorts of things about I'm giving up on one image of what my future will be like and I'm committing to a different kind of image.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever have situations, Sam, where you spoke to your peers about the difference in the differences in the different generations?
Well, I definitely spoke to my peers a lot about their experience of their 20s. Whether I wanted to speak to them about it or not, when they heard that we were working on this book, they would sort of open up about. I had this one conversation with two friends who had just moved to my neighborhood, and I thought we were just going to catch up, talk about the neighborhood, and they kept saying, well, wait, I haven't had a serious girlfriend yet. Is that normal? And I said, I'm not.
Oh, they were looking for normal.
Yeah, am I normal was the theme, and that's I don't feel like I'm an expert in whether or not they're normal.
Well, pointing out that people of previous generations got married soon after they graduated from school, had kids fairly young, what was the response you were getting?
Well, you know, one thing that we did find, if you're comparing baby boomers to millennials, is, yes, we got married younger and we had our babies younger, but the complaints about us were very similar to the complaints that you're hearing about young people now. And I found that really striking. I read some old books, like a book called The Postponed Generation, and another book called Grown-Ups, Young People in Search of Adulthood. And those were written back in the 70s and 80s and could have been written today.
Although, don't statistics indicate that young adults are deciding to get married and move away from home at least 5 years later than in previous generations?
Yes, so it is later, but apparently it's like sort of standard to think young people are taking too long, or they're not doing it the way we want them to do it.
Is that five-year delay what psychologist Jeffrey Arnett means when he talks about emerging adulthood?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, that people are taking longer to hit these traditional milestones of adulthood, which include, you know, having your own, moving out and having your own place and getting married, having a baby. And so in that period before hitting those milestones, as that extends, Arnett considers it a period where a lot of important sort of identity formation is going on, that it's not just what may look like taking too long to get started. It's not actually that they're stalling. It's that they're doing some important development in that time.
Can we assume that people were using the early marriage and having the child as a form of identity exploration?
Yes, we can
in earlier
very
generations.
Much assume
today,
that.
People want to feel, well, I want to know who I am before I do that sort of thing. It'll make me a better parent.
Right. There's a lot of that sense now that I want to have I want to have my act together before I get married and have a family. And I think in my day, it was more the case that that was one way of getting your act together. You know, that was one way of becoming grown up, was to act like a grown up.
My guests are Robin Moranz Hennig and Samantha Hennig. They have collaborated on 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? It's published by Hudson Street Press. We invite your calls to 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, whether you are a 20-something or you are of an earlier generation. We don't have to limit ourselves to boomers. No.
Anybody.
But would pretty much all of the parents of 20-somethings be boomers, or is there an in-between generation there now?
There's probably an in-between generation. You know, I'm a boomer, and I started having children at 26, which was actually kind of young for my peers. So my kids are already in their 20s. But there are some people from, I guess, a slightly older generation with children in their 20s.
We'll be back right after this. We are back with science journalist Robin Moranz Hennig, who is the author of 8 books and a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. In 2010, she received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Society of Journalists and Authors. Samantha Hennig is a 20-something journalist who has been a reporter and editor for Newsweek, Slate, and The New Yorker. She's currently the online editor of the New York Times Magazine. And they have collaborated, mother and daughter, on 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? It is published by Hudson Street Press. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go right to one of those calls. This is from Leah from Park Ridge, New Jersey. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was really interested to hear this discussion, but I'm a 57-year-old woman who has a 21-year-old daughter. And in fact, most of my friends in my generation waited until we were, you know, in our late 30s. I was only able to have one child. We all faced that secondary infertility problem and all from waiting. So the conversation I'm having with my daughter and with my friends is about talking to our daughters about not waiting so long. And in fact, that's what our daughters are talking to us about. You know, we were in that generation that sort of was able to become lawyers and doctors and whatever, and we all put off having children. So it's a somewhat different conversation that we're having about, do you wait this long, and what were the consequences of
waiting? Did you hear similar things from respondents to your questionnaires?
Yes, and it's very interesting. I've heard suggestions that there might actually be a backlash, that the boomers waited a long time generally to have children. I was unusually young, and that maybe our sons and daughters are not going to wait as long. I'd like to see how that plays out. I mean, clearly you're having that conversation, and my kids, you know, will say, well, we don't have the situation that you had at your age. We're taking a longer time. So some of it depends on the individual family, but some of it is a bigger issue.
But statistics indicate that people are waiting longer. Maybe we have large segments of every group that will wait longer. Some people never get married. Some people have children when they're married. Some people have children when they're not married.
Right. But so the statistics are showing, you're right, that right now the women who are in their late 20s, early 30s are waiting longer.
Let's take a call from Carrie from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I love your show. Thank you very much. I'm from Manasquan, New Jersey, the Jersey Shore, hard-hit Jersey Shore. And I'm a mother, 50-year-old mother of 5 children. I gave up a career. I'm college-educated. I actually have a master's degree as well. But I found myself in a situation, your guest was saying how people in our generation identified themselves, got their identity because they became mothers. Well, I did that, and I really, truly felt, you know, identified that way. I have 5 beautiful children. My oldest is 22, recently graduated from college and got a job. God bless her. But then I went through a horrible divorce, and now that my children are getting older, I don't really have that identity of just being a mom anymore, and I need to get a job. and 20 years out of the workforce, and here I am going to my 22-year-old daughter for advice on resume writing and interviewing. So it was somewhat of a shock to me.
That's interesting. I mean, we did notice that some of the stuff that is described as sort of typical of this emerging adulthood stage is also similar to what empty nesters go through. It is sort of a second time when you do all of this reformation of your identity.
A lot of people have been writing in about the economics of the current situation. One listener wrote, the general cost of living, paying off college student debts, going to grad school because you need more degrees today to get jobs, thus incurring more debt. The fact that job security as well as many jobs have vanished have made it difficult for young adults to start their adult lives. Also, many people have been raised with unrealistic expectations of financial and professional success. So when they don't achieve it, they get depressed.
Yes. Yep.
That sounds really sad, but all of that is accurate. And it's actually, there's much greater percentage of people's incomes are devoted to paying back student loans than ever before.
Let's take another call. Robin from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So I did call just to reflect what you just were previously talking about, the fact that students are graduating with far more debt. I'm in my late 20s doing a PhD, and the idea of having children paying off graduate student loans is just, it's so far off in the future for me. The other thing is that there's a reality that two parents must work now to have any sort of semblance of a good standard of living, and the social services that we've used in the past are no longer reflective of that current reality. Other countries have instituted things like guaranteed paid maternity leave to let women have the opportunities to go back to work, but also deal with the realities of raising a young child. So I think until the U.S. realizes that there are certain policies that need to be put in place for two working parents to have a child, we're going to still see this delayed onset.
Right. But, an interesting thing is some of the countries that have the best social policies for supporting young parents, like Scandinavia, also have very, very late parenthood. So I'm not sure. I mean, it's not, the timing isn't only about the lack of social services. That's actually another additional real problem.
But haven't things changed? When I was a kid, both my parents had to work, and we went to a nursery school. And then that nursery school, at a certain point, became a place where we were dropped off, and then we went to public school. We came back, and we stayed there until my mother came home from work. And nobody thought twice about it. Now, I don't see those kinds of nursery schools available. This was a very inexpensive thing. I think it was mostly supported by New York City or New York State.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are daycare centers now. There's a lot of those kind of things, but they don't tend to be inexpensive.
Mary left this comment, as a parent of 320-somethings, I'm noticing parents who seem reluctant for children returning from college to move out. Is there something going on with the parents of this group also?
That's interesting. So the parents are getting too attached to their kids.
Because I thought it was the other way around. A lot of parents complaining, my kid moved back because he or she couldn't find a place, and now I'm stuck with a kid when I thought I was going to be able to enjoy this period.
Right. Although I guess, like the earlier caller said, if you're suddenly, without your kids around and needing to reform your identity of yourself, it kind of makes sense that if the kids come back, then, okay, you get to be a parent again. You get to know your role again. So I could see how that would be appealing.
My guests are Samantha Hennig and Robin Moranz-Hennig. Their book, 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? It's published by Hudson Street Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Lex in Jersey City writes, they've overlooked Gen X in this discussion. That generation had an important impact on millennials. Have we overlooked them?
Well, I guess in our conversation, we have overlooked them a little bit. It's also a very squishy, who's Gen X, who's Gen Y, what a millennial is. We were deliberately, in our definition of millennial, we actually included some people in their early 30s as being part of this this situation of not knowing quite what they're going to do next. Because a lot of people in their early 30s told us, despite the name of the book, don't you mean too?
Let's go to Angel from Massapequa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, well, I have two daughters. One is 25 and the other's 23. And I really wanted to get your opinion on, in addition to being stuck, is there also some level of entitlement that these young adults, or seemingly think of themselves as young adults? It seems to be more that they're reaching adulthood more at 30 than 21. Is there some level of entitlement that's there that maybe we as parents are promoting, that we're just, you know, we're doing something wrong?
We hear that word entitlement thrown around a lot in terms of this age group. And I guess it's a little fair, but I think that there's also a positive side to that entitlement. I mean, there's if you look at the startup culture, people like David Karp, who started Tumblr, or Mark Zuckerberg, who started Facebook. I mean, these are young people who you could frame it as entitlement, that they think that they don't need to go through the corporate ladder, they don't need to pay their dues. But then you could also see it as entrepreneurial. So I think there's definitely entitlement there, but I don't know that it's worse than ever before.
Thank you for calling us. Chapter 6 begins with, "You'll never again be as sexy, as clever, as beautiful as you are in your 20s. Is that true? I think I got better looking when I got older. Or is this only for women?
My husband thinks so, too. So thinks he did.
Thinks Leonard did?
No, thinks he himself did. Maybe it's only for women. It was a grabby kind of beginning of the chapter about your body as you are in your 20s. But in many respects, the 20-something body is one that's working at its peak.
Let's go to Renee from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Who?
You.
Renee?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for getting me. Thanks for the program. Yes, I'm 73 years old in the Bronx. I have a son who's 48, a granddaughter who's 18. And I have to report that in my day, I heard it from 50-year-olds, in my day, if you weren't married by 25, you were an old maid. I got married at 19. My husband was 20. It was a disaster. I'd been very independent all my life. Started working when I was 16, started teaching when I was 20. I was one of those, from the Betty Friedan generation. I was a working mother, a mother, a wife, and tried to do it all perfectly and couldn't.
And Renee, what is the bottom line here?
The bottom line is that I really think that in a way my granddaughter was being coddled. And that people in their 20s are not as responsible because they haven't left childhood. You know, they haven't done more adult things in their late teens and early 20s. And I also think that they have a tremendous disadvantage right now with the economic market and a lot of reasons why they continue in school, because they can't get jobs. And the economics is much different. I was able to get a job immediately. And so I think there's two-sided factor. Now, I don't know whether it was my son who was very overprotective of my granddaughter because he wasn't protected properly by me because I was working. I mean, I really don't know whether it was a familial thing or a generational thing. But
let me get my guess into
this. I'm leaving it up to you guys to think.
Okay. I suspect you heard all of that from other people as well.
We have heard a lot of it from other people. And each story is so interesting. I sort of have a hard time making any kind of generalization about an entire generation of coddled kids or entitled kids or hardworking parents, because we're all so different. And the notion that this generation of young people is distinct and one undifferentiated mass, I think, is wrong.
Quickly, Andrew from Queens.
Hello?
Yes, Andrew.
Am I on?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I was wanted to give a little bit of the male perspective. I have just broken up with my girlfriend of 3 years. I'm 31. She's turning 27. And marriage was an issue. I wasn't ready. I had always planned to get married at 40. And, you know, her being in her 20s, she wanted to get married soon because, man, we have that luxury. So, and now, you know, her looking back in the dating game, she has less of a margin of error. And I just wanted to bring that to light and talk about how men and women should really discuss these things soon.
Yeah, well, I think your point is also that there's pressure on men to have children sometimes before they want to have them. And we've gotten a number of people writing into our comment page. One says, why does there seem to be an implicit assumption that having kids is a good or adult thing to do? Frankly, in a resource-scarce and economically destabilized world, it seems a bit irresponsible and arguably selfish if you're not in a place to take care of them. And then another person writes, I'm in my early 30s. I don't know how I can have a child and have it completely without having it completely undermine my career. Most of my friends feel the same way. It takes so long to establish a career these days and become financially sufficient that it doesn't even seem possible to have children early in your 30s while juggling professional responsibilities. There's no way my husband and I could afford daycare and our rent, even though we have two incomes.
Right.
You're nodding your head.
I'm nodding my head.
You've heard all of these things.
I've heard them. And we have we cite a study in the book of somebody who looked at lifelong earnings for women and found that for every 10 years that you delay in having a child, your lifelong earnings double. So waiting until you're in a position to actually be able to afford them turns out to be useful.
And maybe that's why you're freezing your eggs at 37.
Right, maybe.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Robin Moranz-Hennig and Samantha Hennig, their book, 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? It's published by Hudson Street Press. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks.
Leonard.